In just a few days, on July 1st, Iowa's new medical marijuana oil program will start. However, there are big questions about how the production and distribution system will work. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This hour, we'll hear from Iowans who have a personal stake in the new law. We'll discuss the design of Iowa's medical cannabis program compared to other states. We'll also talk with a distributor of medical marijuana in Minnesota about the experience there. Do you or a loved one have a condition that qualifies for Iowa's new medical marijuana oil program? Join our discussion. First, this hour's news.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Valley View Village, an adult community offering a complete continuum of care, including independent living, assisted living, skilled and long-term care. Learn more about this community at valleyviewvillage.org.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. On July 1st, in just a few days, Iowa's medical marijuana oil program will start. It's a new program that allows the use of cannabis oil for those suffering from an expanded list of conditions in addition to epilepsy, including cancer, multiple sclerosis, seizures, HIV or AIDS, Crohn's disease, for example, also Parkinson's disease, and terminal illness with a life expectancy of under a year. So recently, the nonpartisan Legislative Fiscal Office forecast that over 6,000 people will enroll in this new program here in Iowa. However, there are significant questions about it. Obtaining the medicine, it'll be difficult. Manufacturers don't know whether, in business terms, the state's effort will be viable. A couple of the big questions here. This hour, we want to hear from a couple of Iowans who have a real stake in this new program, a caregiver in just a moment. We'll also talk a little later with a distributor of medical marijuana in Minnesota. They're a little bit further down the road than we are here in Iowa. We'd like to hear from you as well. Tell us, do you or a loved one have a condition that qualifies for Iowa's new medical marijuana oil program? Or what questions do you have about the new program? 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org. That is our email. We'll also be accepting your emails, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. Our first guest is Sally Geyer. She's a caregiver of a 27-year-old daughter with epilepsy. Sally, are you there?
Hi, Ben. Yeah.
Hi. Welcome to the program. Thank you for sharing your story with Iowa Public Radio. Tell us about your daughter and her condition.
Yeah, Margaret is 27, as you said. She has a rare form of epilepsy called Dravet syndrome. She was not diagnosed till 16. Dravet syndrome is marked by really hard-to-treat seizures,
mm-hmm.
High morbidity rates, and intellectual disability. As well as some physical disabilities.
She's now 27. She's had these severe seizures how long?
She had her first over an hour-long seizure following her four-month DPT immunization.
Mm-hmm. What is a seizure like for her?
You know, it can val. She can have a grand mal seizure, which they now call generalized tonic-clonic. She can have absence seizures. She can have kind of weird ones, like a glorified sleep start, you might call it. You know, most of us have kind of those sleep starts. Well, hers might morph into something a little bit more than that. And I would say at this point, 98% to 99% of her seizures are when she is sleeping.
Mm-hmm. So is it a situation where you have to keep her safe in a special position or area?
Either my husband or I sleeps with her every night. Since her seizures are when she sleeps, it's just peace of mind for either one of us. We've had occasion where her body goes into a convulsion and she can even flip out of bed. So You kind of be next to her for safety and to make sure she's not face down and she has an open airway.
Mm-hmm. So what has been your experience thus far in using medical marijuana in cannabis oil?
We were under the guidelines of the 2014 Act, and in 2015, it took almost a year for the rules to get written. So in 2015 in the spring, when the rules were finally written and we were able to apply for a card to possess, at that time, the Charlotte's Web people, CW Hemp, deemed that their product had such a low amount of THC, they were willing to ship their product to all 50 states.
Mm-hmm. Without violating any federal law.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So we have been receiving it in the mail, and she has been on CW Hemp Oil for over 2 years now.
And what difference has that made?
Margaret has lost over 35 pounds. She is sleeping much better. Her seizures are reduced. Her cognitive level is better. We've been able to reduce two of her seizure meds. She's still on a pretty heavy load of seizure meds, but, you know, she wasn't able to obtain help from medical cannabis at a young age. And I think if she had been much younger, we would have seen a different child.
Really? Because each seizure, the seizures again and again, cause permanent damage?
Yeah. I mean, you know, the jury's out, but yeah, years of brain-numbing seizure medications as well as seizures take their toll on somebody's brain and body.
How does medical marijuana, the oil that you've been using, which is very low in THC, one of the active cannabinoids in cannabis, right? It has CBD, am I getting? How does that compare with all the other seizure-controlling medications you've tried over the years?
Well, it's much healthier, that's for sure. The side effects are positive. In Dravet syndrome, there are actually seizure medications that are contraindicated. They make seizures worse. And since she wasn't diagnosed till 16, we had been through the gamut of good and bad seizure meds, not knowing what we were dealing with. So every patient with epilepsy is a puzzle, and some medications work for some seizure types, and some make them worse, and some don't work at all. And I would imagine nearly every person with a seizure disorder is on a different cocktail of seizure medications.
Mm-hmm. So Iowa's new medical marijuana oil program starts in just a few days. What are your thoughts on this? You will be enrolling or have enrolled?
Well, we will enroll. The Department of Health wrote emergency rules because of the patients that were under the 2014 Act. And so they determined that those of us who have cards under the 2014 Act, those cards are good for a year. So, you know, say we reapplied for our card and got our card in May, we're good with that card until May of next year.
Okay.
So we don't have to re-enroll until next year, which is really nice.
What are your thoughts overall about the new bill, though, the expansion into and the way this system was thought out?
I'm thrilled that we're finally going to get manufacture and distribution in the state of Iowa. I have read through the bill. I've read through the Department of Health's emergency orders. Now they still have to write more rules concerning the bill, but this bill is not oil only. It definitely prohibits smoking, and it prohibits edibles. But I believe in Iowa we're going to be able to have creams and patches as well as oils and who knows what. But I think the Department of Health has the mandate to write the rules as far as what can actually be manufactured. We'll see what happens.
Why is that significant, not just oils but also creams and patches?
Well, you know, someone who may not tolerate an oil well or is not able to swallow, a patch might be way more advantageous for them to absorb the cannabis.
Mm-hmm. So in taking an oil, it's always ingested, taken orally through the mouth.
Well, yeah, unless you're like a G-tube patient, and I know of people that can administer oil through a G-tube, you know, if you can't swallow as well.
Sally, how do you feel about the the parts of the bill that dictate how much THC is allowed in the oil. We again, these little acronyms are these active cannabinoids in cannabis. Two of them, we're talking about CBD and THC. THC is the substance that makes you high, right?
Well, yeah, they say it's the psychotropic effect, but it's also the spark that can ignite the other cannabinoids to work. So, you know, I'm disappointed that the legislature decided to cap the THC because they're not going to be helping people with multiple sclerosis or high pain people that are addicted to opioids that could certainly come off a lot of those opioids and all those horrible side effects with even a THC patch. I mean, they're not helping a bulk of the patients that they set out to specifically name in the earlier part of the bill.
Mm-hmm. Nevertheless, you'd agree a step forward in your eyes.
Oh, absolutely.
What hopes do you have for legislation in the future?
Well, you know, I'm just hopeful that they will go forward and say and get some of the restrictions out of there and allow the medical advisory board that they've set up to make those decisions. Legislators are not physicians or doctors. There are a few of them that are pharmacists and maybe some nurses in there. I'm not aware of any doctors right off the top of my head, but, you know, I don't know why they're dictating what is allowable and what is not. I think the medical community should be able to do that.
Sally Gare, stay with us. If you've just joined us, Sally is a mother caregiver of a 27-year-old daughter who's her whole life, practically since being a baby, suffered tremendous seizures due to epilepsy and has found a lot of relief in, well, the Iowa's first law that allowed medical cannabis, medical cannabis oil. And now Sally is with us commenting on, as we talk just a few days before Iowa's new medical marijuana oil program kicks in. Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. Let's talk about some of the legal aspects as well of medical marijuana, the relationship between the federal government and states. Robert Mikos is with us, professor of law at Vanderbilt University Law School. He's just published a first of a textbook about marijuana law. And Robert, welcome to our program.
Thanks for having me.
I understand you grew up in Fort Dodge here in Iowa.
I did. I'm in Iowa, so I'm an Iowan by birth and spent my first 18 years there, so I have a special affinity for the state.
Well, great. We're glad to have you on, especially now, of course, with your expertise here. You've been involved in the legal aspects of medical marijuana for some time, going back a decade or so. What have you been looking at specifically?
Well, it's interesting to see that the states that are pursuing this, they are now the majority of states. In fact, at this point, we probably have 45 states in the nation, if you include the District of Columbia, 45 states that have legalized marijuana in some form. And we can sort of put those states into different categories. But it's interesting to see that all the states are taking slightly different approaches. You've got about 14 states that, like Iowa, they have legalized CBD, a form of marijuana or a chemical really taken from the cannabis plant. You've got about 31 states that have legalized marijuana more broadly for medical purposes. And then you've got 9 of those 31 states that have also legalized it for adult use. So you've got these three broad categories of laws that the states are pursuing, but even within those, you've got a lot of variation. For example, I think Iowa may be the first of those 14 CBD states to seriously pursue authorizing some companies to supply this drug commercially. The other 13 states, including my new state of Tennessee, haven't done so. They've authorized people to go ahead and possess it and to use it for certain medical conditions, but they haven't provided any way to actually supply the drug to them, any legal way.
Mm-hmm.
So Iowa, in a sense, is breaking new grounds within this group of CBD states.
Mm-hmm. We have a question from Katarina listening. What is the difference between medical marijuana and the CBD hemp oil that you can buy over the counter?
The difference, if you find the hemp oil, you can find that in places like Trader Joe's and some other vendors. It all depends on where that oil comes from. So the definition of marijuana includes certain parts of the cannabis plant under federal law and under state laws as well. So it includes things like the buds and the leaves and certain other parts of the plant. It excludes certain parts of the plant, like the stalks, other parts of the plant that typically don't have much THC. So it's possible to legally obtain certain food products that are made from those excluded portions of the cannabis plant. It's possible to obtain those legally. That's not considered marijuana under federal law. But if it's made from any part of the plant that falls under the definition of marijuana, it's considered marijuana, whether or not it contains any THC or anything else. So if you see something on the shelves, the assumption is, unless they're violating the law, the assumption is that it's made from a portion of the plant that is excluded from the definition of marijuana.
Robert Mikos is with us of Vanderbilt University Law School. He's just published first textbook on marijuana law, has been studying it, researching it for quite a long time. We have a number of callers. Let's go to Charlie. Charlie in Grimes. Hi, Charlie. Welcome to our program.
Hello there. I'm in Dubuque, Iowa.
You're in Dubuque, Iowa. Okay, my screen is acting up on me here. Welcome to you from Dubuque, Iowa. What is your angle on this? Are you someone who is interested in using medical marijuana?
Very much so. I was diagnosed in 2001 with estrogen-positive breast cancer, and I went through the treatment and my breast removed. And 10 years to the day, I was diagnosed with triple-negative breast cancer. Had my breast removed, 4 rounds of chemo, and I now have the metastasized triple-negative breast cancer. And there's not a whole bunch of good news with that, but knowing that this law could pass in Iowa, not only for me or for epilepsy, Parkinson's, it's just such a good feeling. And I do wish that the lawmakers would stay out of the doctors and the medical field unless they're really going to push for this, because this is hope for a lot of people, including myself.
Mm-hmm. And these are... I'm so glad you called up, Charlie, to give us your personal experience here. And I know it takes courage to do that. You have a circle of friends or acquaintances with conditions this can also help, you think?
Oh my gosh, yes. My gosh, yes. I belong to Best of Friends. We're a breast cancer survivor Dragon Boat team. And we've seen a lot of our teammates pass away. We've seen a lot of teammates do fantastic and carry on the word. Just not only in the cancer, the breast cancer field, but just health-wise, these children that have seizures, my gosh, it would be such a godsend for something like this to go through.
Okay, Charlie.
I sure hope.
Okay, Charlie, thank you for your perspective calling from Dubuque. Thank you so much.
You bet.
We're talking about Iowa's new medical marijuana law here on River to River. If you have an angle, a question, perhaps you or someone you love qualifies to use Iowa's medical marijuana oil program. Perhaps, I guess it was mentioned that it could be in the form of creams or patches as well. 1-866-780-9100. Robert Mikos with us as well. I believe still Sally Gayer, the daughter of the caregiver of a daughter with epilepsy, has had epilepsy since she was a baby. Dr. Andrew Bachman joins us as well. He's one of the Minnesota's producers of medical marijuana, CEO of an organization, a company called Leafline Labs. Dr. Bachman, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate your interest.
Well, we appreciate having you on. You've been listening in, I think, here for at least a few minutes here. Under Iowa's program, officials will license two in-state manufacturers that can start supplying marijuana oil in December of 2018. The state will license up to five dispensaries to supply the drug. Now, you are working under Minnesota's law. How does that differ?
Minnesota's law is actually quite similar. I believe that Iowa really used an emulated Minnesota's law in forming their own. I did want to first say I so appreciate Sally Gere and her story of success. Quite frankly, it certainly helped to motivate me and my company in doing what we're doing up here. My wife is actually from West Des Moines and is a constituent of Sally's husband, as are my in-laws. So we're a Minnesota company, but with Iowa heritage, and have a number of Iowa physicians who are similarly invested in what we're doing up here, which is becoming truly thought leadership in the space and responsibly leading this industry forward, healthcare from the heartland, so to speak. I think that Minnesota and Iowa are very mission aligned in doing this, not just period, but doing this really well.
Mm-hmm.
And we're very proud with the results that we've already seen and now 2 years as of July 1st of treating patients up here in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm. As I mentioned at the outset, our legislative fiscal office forecast over 6,000 people will enroll in Iowa's new program. Now, with Minnesota, very similar program, but you've got a head start on Iowa here. Does that sound reasonable? And tie that into the viability, that number into the viability of a business model that you're working on there.
Both very important, and I appreciate the question. 6,000, in my estimation, is a very high estimate for a first year of the program. So just as a comparison, we actually have been operating in this space with a very similar model, including patches, creams, lotions, et cetera, as Sally pointed out. We, in fact, authored that petition up here in Minnesota, which is now accepted and will go live on August 1st. In 2 years of this program, as of Friday, we now have 6,100 patients in Minnesota. So 23-plus months in, that's when we've achieved that number. We have just over 900 care providers who are certifying patients in the program here in Minnesota. So the economic reality is that those numbers are real. Those numbers are accurate. Those numbers are documented, as is the success of the program. Within 2 years of the program now, seeing that number of patients, we've grown from seeing 1,000 patients year one, we now see 2,000 patients a month.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, having said all of that, we are still not yet profitable.
Okay. And we have to mention, too, Iowa has a less of a population. Minnesota almost double the population here in Iowa, I think, right?
5.5, 5.6 million here, about 3.1 in Iowa.
Okay.
So.
Stay with us, Dr. Bachman. We want to talk with you further, but very quickly before we go to break, we heard a very emotional plea there just a few moments ago. Do you hear that all the time, the gratitude for these law changes?
Every day. It is a blessing to be able to do what we do, and I want to thank Charlie for calling in because what she touched on was huge. It is the hope, it is the access, it is the option to know that you have caregivers like myself who are making all reasonable options available and doing it consistently, doing it as truly medicine, not just medical cannabis, but medicinal cannabis.
Okay, Dr. Andrew Bachman, please stay with us. We have to take a short break. Robert Miko, stay with us as well. Sally Gere has left our conversation. Want to thank her, though, for giving us her personal perspective. We're looking for your take, your questions, your angle on Iowa's new medical marijuana oil program. 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org. I'm Ben Kiefer, back with more of the business angle of medical marijuana under this new law.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Valley View Village, an adult community offering a complete continuum of care, including independent living, assisted living, skilled and long-term care. Learn more about this community at valleyviewvillage.org.
And we're back midstream in this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Today, looking at Iowa's new medical marijuana oil program. It will start up in just a few days. You can enroll now. It allows the use of cannabis oil for those suffering from an expanded list of conditions. The 2014 Act was limited to epilepsy. Now cancer, multiple sclerosis, seizures, HIV or AIDS, Crohn's disease, a number of other things included there in the expanded list. However, some concerns about obtaining the medicine, how difficult that will be. Also, manufacturers not knowing whether, in business terms, the state's effort will be viable. Under the new law, officials will license two in-state manufacturers that can start supplying marijuana oil in December of 2018, and then there will be up to five dispensaries to supply the drug. So we're talking about various aspects of this new law, how it will work, and talking with those most affected by it. We have a number of callers to get in on those points. Robert Mikos is with us, professor of law at Vanderbilt University Law School. Just published a textbook about marijuana law, has been looking at it for many years. Also mentioned a native Iowan. Dr. Andrew Bachman is with us. He's the CEO of Leafline Labs. That's one of Minnesota's producers of medical marijuana. Since they're a little farther down the road, giving us their perspective with their law that's very similar to Iowa's. 1-866-780-9100. Dr. Bachman, I wanted to get to this point of the viability here. How would you size up Iowa's chances for this whole question about manufacturers not knowing whether, in business terms, if this is set up so that it makes good business sense too?
Yeah, I would say, and one key difference that really should be brought up is the THC limitation that Iowa has put in place in their law does not exist in Minnesota's law. So not only does Minnesota have, almost twice the size of population, we also do not have limitations in what we can create as medicine here in Minnesota. So it ends up being a much broader program in that regard. And as I mentioned previously, 23 months into the program, we are a very well-capitalized company tracking ahead of our business plan, as it was always anticipated there would be a significant ramp up in to the point of profitability, but we're not yet there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's something that will be very important when companies are considering participating in this venture as it currently exists down in Iowa.
Right. As a business model, then, as a business, you would like to, you would, if you given the choice, Minnesota's a better legal climate for what you're doing than what we have just set up here in Iowa.
Well, I think as of now, again, having both amended the law, not just written the law the first time, but amended the law now year after year after year, I'm very proud of the program that we have up here. And as a business, it certainly is a more sustainable model than what is presently on the books in Iowa. And certainly believe that Iowa and the legislative leadership down there are committed to getting Iowa's program where it needs to be and getting access to patients. But as of today, Minnesota is actually now has a track record of 6,100 patients that are presently receiving treatment. And again, from our company's perspective, we see over 2,000 a month. And we do so in a safe way. We do so in an efficacious way with zero adverse health events of any seriousness, zero hospitalizations, and 92 to 95% patient satisfaction.
Robert Mikos, what is your legal perspective on the business viability question here?
It's one of the big questions that's facing this field. In the long run, one of the challenges that the states have had is that they've tried to avoid provoking the federal government to respond to their programs. And in the past, part of the way they've done that is to make sure that they're creating sort of an insulated intrastate industry, one that is designed only to serve sort of the local customer base. That's why, every medical marijuana state out there, all of those 30 or so states I mentioned before, each one has its own sort of local industry to supply the drug to patients. that's something you don't have in other medical markets. I mean, the pharmaceutical market, for example, is going to be concentrated. It's only going to be in a couple parts of the country, and it's going to supply patients throughout the country and worldwide. So one of the big questions going forward is, can all of these states continue to survive and supply patients just with a local industry? Or is there a chance now, you know, would the federal government actually tolerate if, for example, Iowa started to allow imports from Minnesota or from other states as well? And what would happen to that that industry that's cropped up? That's one of the big questions. But there are other states that are in a similar boat to Minnesota and where Iowa might be in a couple years. You've got New Jersey, for example, has licensed 5 alternative treatment centers. That's what they call their medical marijuana dispensaries. They currently have about 7,000 or so registered patients. You've got Delaware that has licensed 2 companies to supply it. They've only got about 500 registered patients. So there are other states that are in a similar boat. And the question is, you know, can they survive in the short term and in the long term, if the federal government sort of gives the green light? Are you going to see consolidation in this industry? Are we going to switch to something more along the lines of the pharmaceutical model?
Mm-hmm. While we're talking about the federal government, before we go to our next guest, how concerned do you think that the states should be about the changing words from the federal government? We have, of course, a new administration. The changing rhetoric about prosecuting marijuana crimes.
I don't think too concerned, at least those states that are pursuing strictly medical programs like Iowa and Minnesota. In part, that's because Congress has actually tied the hands of the DOJ. Congress has passed spending legislation that forbids the DOJ from spending any of its money prosecuting people who are acting in compliance with state medical marijuana laws. In addition, the signals coming out of Washington, the new Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, has clearly a negative view of marijuana. He has likened it almost to being as bad as heroin. At the same time, though, he hasn't done anything yet to change the administration's policy, its actual enforcement policy, even towards adult use or recreational marijuana. So it may be too early to say, but he's been a little bit more cautious, a little bit more laid back when it comes to medical marijuana. His big concern seems to be with the recreational or adult use side. So long story short, I think places like Iowa and Minnesota don't need to be too worried that the federal government is going to engage in some crackdown anytime soon.
This hour, if you've just joined us, we're talking about Iowa's new medical marijuana oil program. And you've been listening to Robert Mikos, a professor of law at Vanderbilt University Law School, who's been studying this area of law for quite some time. Also with us, Dr. Andrew Bachman, CEO of Leafline Labs in Minnesota. They're producers of medical marijuana applications. Let's now talk to Katie Krug, an Iowan, a young mother, who is not going to benefit from the new law. Katie, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for joining us this hour. Now, you have a condition that I understand at the last minute was excluded from this expanded list of conditions that could be treated under Iowa's new program. May I ask, what is your condition?
Yes, it's called ulcerative colitis, and so it is inflammation in the large intestine. You have different flare-ups of the disease, different times that you're in remission, and you have ulcers that form in your colon. Now, it was a part of the original bill, but was cut for some reason. I'm not exactly sure why, but Crohn's was left on there, and Crohn's is a cousin disease of ulcerative colitis. They are very, very similar diseases. They're both inflammatory bowel diseases. So I'm a little unsure why ulcerative colitis was cut, but Crohn's disease was able to stay on the list.
Mm-hmm. How would cannabis oil benefit you? It would be in the pain department?
It would definitely be both. So it would be in pain, but then also having me be in remission. Right now, the medication that I'm on, I had to sign a waiver saying that I understood that I could possibly die from a brain infection. So these medications that they're using to treat these diseases have some very serious side effects. And I have two friends with ulcerative colitis that were just recently diagnosed with cancer as a result of these medications.
Mm-hmm. And does it matter that the THC content, CBD, THC, these are the components that are active that we've been talking about for medicinal purposes. Does that mix make a difference for your specific condition?
Yes, absolutely. And I know that Sally had spoken about this earlier, that the THC really does activate the CBD part of the cannabis plant. And I have been in discussions with a mother over in Colorado who moved her son over from Illinois that has ulcerative colitis. And in order for this to be effective as a treatment plan, the THC has to be at least 50%.
Mm-hmm. Let me have Dr. Bachman answer this, but also throw in an email from one of our listeners. Christopher, on this topic, says, while progress has been made, he writes, I think the legislature let these families and patients down. Their decision to limit THC content to almost nothing will adversely affect the efficacy of this medicine. Iowa now has a program that I don't think will help many Iowans. What do you think about the comments there by Katie and also by Christopher via email, Dr. Bachman, on this point?
Yes, and specifically speaking to Katie, I really appreciate her calling in. Crohn's disease was on Minnesota's original bill that became statute here in Minnesota, and ulcerative colitis was subsequently added. And as Katie points out, it is in a category that is called inflammatory bowel disease. Both are, in fact. There are a significant number of cannabinoids, including THC, including CBD specifically, that are both anti-inflammatory agents. Every white blood cell in our body has a receptor that CBD can bind that actually helps to mitigate inflammation. And all of these medicines act together, and we at Leafline Labs use a whole plant medicine that work in synergy or work as what's called the entourage effect and amplify the effectiveness of each component by working together. The THC limitation, certainly given the list of conditions, there are a number of conditions on Iowa's law that actually are treated quite well with very high THC medicine. And we in Minnesota see, for example, that intractable pain actually makes up now about 70% of the patient enrollment. Intractable pain is treated quite well with higher THC preparations. So when you limit that THC preparation, there's a significant number of individuals who then are essentially disincentivized to be a part of the program or participate in the program without that option.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the makeup of the board that is being set up in Iowa will be critical to determine how quickly the program is able to evolve and how agile the program is going forward.
To what extent have Minnesota legislators listened to the board with the medical expertise? I mean, is that, we've heard that mentioned a couple times this hour, is that a debate there that...
So Minnesota's law was set up just slightly differently in that it was set up without that limitation initially. What we do in Minnesota basically is to look at outlier cases in terms of volume of THC that is administered in a given month. Outliers that we see, we review quarterly. So we basically don't have a hard limit. We just simply meet with the Department of Health, who is our regulator here, and have that discussion. Caregiver to caregiver.
Mm-hmm. Katie Krug, we don't have much time left, but what is your plan now, given that your condition is not covered under this? What will you be doing?
Well, I will continue to take part in the group that we have here, Iowans for Safe Access, and just continue to fight for other conditions to be added, and most importantly, to have use of the whole plant and get use above that 3% THC, because really in effect right now, most of what this bill is going to help would be epilepsy patients.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Bachman, a couple of quick questions here, two perhaps pertaining also to Robert Mikos. But one, Dr. Bachman, the medical community, where is the medical community in the acceptance of cannabis oil treatments in Minnesota?
Well, as I mentioned, we have now over 900 providers who are certifying patients for the program. Just as a comparison, in Colorado's medical program, they have roughly 1,200, 1,300 providers who are certifying 112,000 patients. So we have 900 providers who are certifying 6,100 patients. So I actually am quite proud of the rate of adoption, the rate of understanding, the rapid education that has occurred. And we've done a lot of it ourselves, of course, with my medical colleagues up here in Minnesota. Again, a number of our supporters, investors, and backers are physicians in Iowa, similarly. And that is, I believe, going to be very beneficial to Iowa and its program development going forward. There are a number of people who are already significantly ahead of where we were 3 years ago because of the education, because of the support, because of that advocacy that we've put out there already.
Mm-hmm. Quickly, Dr. Bachman, speak quickly to the prices for medical marijuana in Minnesota and the degree to which insurance, health insurance, may cover it.
Sure. Presently, health insurance does not participate in the space. We do have workers' compensation programs that are covering a significant number of our patients at this time, which is an exciting new development. Health insurance companies will be clamoring for this medicine, which is extremely cost-effective and treats a number of conditions, as we've been talking about on the show. The average price per month at this point is actually below what we had suggested it would be on our initial application, right now at about $189 per month.
Mm-hmm. We don't have much time to explore this in depth, but in this context, the opioid epidemic gets mentioned. Is helping people who would otherwise rely on opioids for pain part of this picture?
Huge part of this picture. So studies have demonstrated quite well now that states that have a responsible medical cannabis program in place that does include the treatment of intractable pain see in year one roughly a 25% reduction in prescription opiate overdose deaths. Year two, 30%. Year three, roughly 33%.
Mm-hmm.
And when we right now are presently seeing about 18,000 Americans a year dying, one every 28 minutes, from prescription opioids, and prescription drugs have become actually the leading cause of preventable death in America, you can imagine the importance of that statistic.
Uh-huh. And for those not acquainted, quickly, what, I mean, when you compare opioids with marijuana, they're in two different classes, as a medical doctor speaking.
Correct. And most importantly, two different classes when it comes to their safety profile. So medical cannabis has been used for 5,000 years on planet Earth. Zero people have ever died from an acute ingestion of this medicine. Opioids, as I just mentioned, are killing Americans one every 28 minutes and also sparked a heroin, fentanyl, and carfentanil epidemic that actually increases that number to about one every 17 minutes.
Robert Mikos, to conclude here, where are we headed in all this in terms of the legal, the patchwork that you have state by state, making the manufacturers and the dispensaries? Where do you, when you put all the study of all the states you've done over a decade, where do you imagine we'll be in 5 or 10 years?
I think you're going to see, you know, slow expansion into other states, other parts of the country that have been more hostile to marijuana and medical marijuana. I think you'll see more of those medical marijuana states expanding their laws to include adult use or recreational use. But it may take some time. I think it's, you know, one lesson we can learn is from the repeal of alcohol prohibition. And even after the repeal of national prohibition, it still took about 5 decades till you had the last state to repeal its own state-level prohibition. So there's a clear direction. I think all this is moving. I don't think we'll see any action at the federal level as long as President Trump is in office. But you're going to continue to see a rollout among states, more and more states doing what Iowa's doing and expanding into broader medical marijuana programs and potentially even recreational marijuana programs.
Mm-hmm. Katie Krug, in your case, your condition did not make it on this list in this new law, but when you hear in this program, and you've done a lot more research than just this program, I know, are you generally positive when you think about people being treated by medical marijuana in the future?
Yes, absolutely, and that's what I've told anyone that asked me about it, is that I know in another 5 to 10 years that everything will be completely different, and this will just be a standard form of care. But for me, I have to try to get through the next 5 or 10 years and keep on these medications that can be very damaging, and hope to keep my colon without having to have surgery to remove it physically.
Okay, I want to thank you very much for giving us your personal story. Katie Krug, an Iowan, not benefiting currently from the new law with an expanded list of conditions to be treated by medical marijuana oil. Thank you, Katie.
Thank you.
Thank you, Robert Mikos, professor of law at Vanderbilt University Law School.
Thank you.
Just published a textbook about marijuana law. We appreciate your time, Robert.
Thank you for having me.
And Dr. Andrew Bachman there in Minnesota, CEO of Leaf Line Labs. Thank you so much. Thanks for those who called and emailed during this part of the program. We didn't get to all of our callers or all of our emails, but thank you for writing those, and we do our best every day. This was a popular topic. River to River is produced by Lindsay Moon, Emily Woodbury, and Ben Stanton. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Help also today from Chelsea Hoy. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.